Make your weekend better at Buena Connection Brewing Company. Fresh craft beer, great vibes, and a tap room perfect for kicking back. Grab a pint, bring friends, and enjoy the weekend at Buena Connection Brewing Company. Go to BuenaConnectionBrewing.com. Welcome to Beverage Chronicles. I am Gary Monteroso, and we're going to get right into the show as I am going to be on location for a segment with the owners of a new meadery that is making waves in my area, which is New Jersey. For those of you that don't know, mead is a unique type of, let's call it a honey wine, that uses locally sourced ingredients. So I'm going to get right to it. Hope you enjoy. And I'm at Rag & Bone Meadery in southern New Jersey, specifically South Harrison Township, New Jersey, with the owners of the facility, John Ternea, and his wife, Nina Rosenberg. Thanks for allowing us to join you here in this beautiful, beautiful building.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for coming all the way.
Now, Rag & Bone Meadery, there are people that do not know what mead is. So let's start with that. What is mead? And it's spelled M-E-A-D. John?
Mead is fermented honey, also called honey wine, and the confusing part about mead is that it doesn't have any standard. So a mead could be as low as like 3 or 4% ABV, it could be all the way up to 18% ABV, it could be flat, it could be sparkling, so there's a lot of confusion about mead.
The first time I tried mead, which was probably, I'm going to guess maybe 15 years ago, I had only experienced double-digit ABV meads, and then I realized that there are some lower alcohol ABV meads. Is there a trend? Are we going in one direction or another, or are we seeing both types in terms of strength?
I think, yeah, the low ABV session meads are gaining in popularity. They're fun, they're crushable, they're quicker to make, so the turnaround is a lot easier. We prefer to do wine style, but there is an uptick in session meads for sure.
So we can almost equate that with what we're seeing in terms of beers and wines. We're seeing a lot of the lower sessionable, as you mentioned, ABV beverages becoming popular, in part because people are driving. They're going to visit, you know, breweries, meaderies, cideries, and they, in many cases, have to drive home. So it does kind of make sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Okay, I'd
absolutely
agree.
All right. Mead, is this true, is often called the world's oldest alcoholic beverage? So there's a lot of history that goes into the creation of mead.
We're really big into history. The history of mead is vast and far-reaching. As far as it being the oldest beverage, I think beer might have the claim on that, but we can definitely talk more about the history.
Yeah, any place that had honey, there is documentation of them making a fermented honey beverage. It could be, most notably Norse, the Vikings in Northern Europe, but also China, and Ethiopia has Tej. Mesoamerica, anywhere that there was honey, there was fermented mead.
And there was a question about when beer, for example, started. We know there's evidence that goes back to ancient Iran, Iraq, kind of where the Tigris and Euphrates met. I know there's some evidence that they found there that perhaps beer may have accidentally begun. So who can pinpoint the exact time? There's no question about that. Because it's honey-driven, it's honey-based, there are people that are going to think that the drink is very, very sweet. Is that the case for meads?
That doesn't have to be the case. Mm-hmm. As we were mentioning before, with the vast range that mead can have, it also goes from sweet to dry. And so it can be anywhere in between sweet to dry. And there are,
there's a mead for everybody. If somebody likes a dry mead, it's out there.
If I go to a store and I'm looking for mead, for example, how would I recognize a well-made mead? Is there anything that I could do by label that would help me determine what's a good mead?
That's a really good question. The most identifiable mead at the grocery store was Danksmjød, but they've switched from their clay bottles to, I think, just glass. So that was one way to determine where mead was by the unique bottling that took place. Mm-hmm. But even that, I think, with the cost of things these days, I think they've even switched, but Danksmjød's been using clay bottles for a decade or more.
I think we're also very fortunate in this modern era that there is a lot of really great mead out there. The batches are usually small. There's not a major mega mead producer out there yet. And when you have these small batch focused meaderies, you're more often going to get a very good product.
Why did you guys decide to do mead and cider as opposed to just one beverage? What's to handle that one? As husband and wife look at each other here saying, gee, where do I go with this?
In New Jersey, the mead license is intrinsically tied to the cider license. So when when you apply for a mead and cider license, it comes together. So if you wanted to be a cidery, you would also get a mead license and vice versa. So we initially just wanted to be a meadery, but it came with about 30,000 gallons of cider along with it.
John, is there one of the two that you prefer creating, or you you shaking his head? Yes, all right, let's hear this. Tell me.
Yeah, so we are very focused on historical recreation, and some of my favorite recipes come from that.
Yeah, the mead, okay. For sure. Cider is fun, but we've had a really fun time researching mead. A lot of the primary sources that we find these old mead recipes in come from women's cookbooks and homekeeping books. And it's just a great insight into how people lived back then and how brewing was such a day-to-day activity. I encourage everybody to make alcohol if they can, within the legal state regulated reason, mm-hmm. But it is a very doable thing. We can make alcohol, we can make our own mead, and I encourage people to do that.
Now, you mentioned that there are still meads and also carbonated mead. Is there one style nationally that seems to be more popular? When I first had mead, it was always still, it was never carbonated, and then I was turned on to it by a mead maker, a mead brewer. Is there one that's more popular than the other?
I think that in Europe, still meads are very popular. Mm-hmm. The Polish, they have a few different styles of meads that are usually very strong, the Dwajos, Trajos style. So these are usually stronger, very sweet meads. And then I think in the United States, the mead culture is very different. And I think that you'll see a lot of more low ABV meads, and you'll see a lot more session meads and sparkling meads in the United States.
Okay, let's delve into cider a little bit now.
Sure.
Cider was hot, as you guys know, in the 90s. 2024, as with many beverages, it took a downturn, but it bounced back strongly last year in 2025, and everything I'm hearing is that 2026 is going to be a good year for cider. So, keeping that in mind, tell us about your cider experience. What type of ciders are you going to be producing?
Wow. It's great to hear that it's doing well. This is good for us. For us, we go by what's happening locally. We are in a farming community. We are actually a farm, and we do create our own raw ingredients for our brews. But we don't have orchards. What we do have around us is an abundance of orchards. So we see what the farmers are doing. We see their crops, see what's going on. And we love apple picking. We love participating in the culture of the rural area that we live in. Mm-hmm. So that's what gets me excited about cider, is supporting the orchards around us and using their apples. And so that's what we take from our cider making, is just supporting the agricultural legacy of the area.
Mm-hmm. As I mentioned, yes, cider is, again, taking off. I think you're jumping on it at just the right time.
Cider also has the benefit of being low ABV. Mm-hmm. And so when you're coming to the meadery and you're kind of expecting sweet, you can turn to cider and you know that it's going to be pretty crisp and low ABV.
Mm-hmm. Would you do any ciders from pears?
Oh, Perry.
Perry, right.
Yeah, I would love to do a Perry. I think that would be really fun. We haven't tried it yet, but yeah, we're open to the many ways that cider can come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's also some really cool historical recipes for perries and ciders as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, excellent.
What challenges do you face in opening a new business like this? Is it turning people on to the beverages? Tell me what you're facing at this point.
I'd rather not focus on the hindrances of being a new business. Mm-hmm. And for us, we have to maintain optimism. And we have to believe in ourselves and our community that we're going to come together. And we strongly believe that we are going to be benefiting this community and giving them a place to celebrate and come together. So we have to believe that we're going to succeed because we have to believe in our community.
You have a beautiful tap room. Tell me how that came together. I absolutely love this. It's charming, it's cozy, and I think it's going to be an enticing place for people. People are going to love coming here.
I appreciate that. We are, like I said, we're a farm first, and so a lot of these buildings are agricultural outbuildings from just 30 years of farming here, and we're a family. This is my family home, and we live here, and we just want to have it be as welcoming a place for other people as it is for our family gatherings that we have here. So we're happy to share it with everyone and make it feel as warm and inviting as we possibly can.
John and Nina, this is a wonderful place, Rag and Bone Meadery. And again, the website is?
ragandbonemeadery.com.
And to email you, ragandbonemeadery@gmail.com. And again, the address is in South Harrison Township, New Jersey, Southern New Jersey. And this is an absolutely wonderful place. I love the tap room, and I think it's going to be really successful. So thank you for joining us on Beverage Chronicles.
Thank you very much for having us.
We hope to see you this spring when we open our tasting room.
You will see myself. There's no question about that. Thanks again, guys.
I must mention that the one mead sample that I tried actually was a recipe that went back hundreds of years, and it was absolutely delicious. So I'm really looking forward to visiting again this spring. Okay, now let's send it over to our Michelle Lamb with some public relations and marketing tips. Michelle?
Welcome back to Beverage Chronicles, where we pour the stories behind the spirits. I'm Michelle Lamb, and today we're breaking down exactly how public relations helps beverage brands grow. Not in theory, but on a very real micro level. Whether you're launching a new label, entering a new market, or trying to stand out on a crowded shelf, PR isn't just about press. It's about positioning, trust, and visibility that converts. So let's uncork the key ways PR supports beverage brands. And I'll break each one down so you can see how it works behind the scenes. PR amplifies product launches and market entries. On a micro level breakdown, starting off with coordinates timing across press, influencers, and events. Following, creating urgency and relevancy around launches. And finally, helping brands avoid launching into silence. Why it matters? Well, a launch without PR is just a release. PR turns into a moment. And that wraps up today's Beverage Chronicles breakdown on how public relations truly supports beverage brands, from credibility and storytelling to sales and long-term growth. Whether you're a startup distillery or an established brand looking to scale, PR is one of the few tools that builds trust, visibility, and relevance at the same time. I'm Michelle Lamb. Thanks for tuning in. And as always, keep pouring with purpose and leading with story.
As a person that primarily reviews beers, I'm usually asked one of two questions. The first is, what's your favorite beer? And I'm going to skip that for now. And the second is, what's the strongest beer? I will say that what may be the strongest beer isn't necessarily the best tasting beer. Of course, you realize that. But one that I just heard about is a Scottish beer, which I believe is called Bethir Fire. And I don't think you're going to crack this open at a barbecue, to be honest with you. A bottle is priced at about $62, which doesn't even include, of course, shipping costs if you could get it. The bigger hurdle, though, is the alcohol content. You know, most beers are in single digits in terms of alcohol by volume, but this Scottish beer comes in at 75% alcohol by volume. That's 150 proof, and that's higher than even some vodka brands. The name of the beer is inspired by a dragon-like figure from Scottish folklore, and the beer, it's called Scottish Bethir Fire. It packs enough heat for both itself and its namesake, thanks to a distinctive brewing method. It starts as a Scottish barley ale that's brewed for 2 months before being mixed with spirits and filtered for purity. And it's going to knock you off your feet. Brewery that produces it recommends serving it in a 35 milliliter glass. To equate that to ounces, that's about an ounce. Usually they recommend that you have cherry syrup with it and lemon juice to make it more palatable. Good luck finding that one. And that's it for Beverage Chronicles. We'll see you next week.